For South Carolina Public Radio and Sonatas and Soundscapes, I'm Bradley Fuller. Violinist Rachel Barton Pine and harpsichordist Jory Vinacour are internationally acclaimed performers, individually, as soloists, and as a duo. And tonight, the pair are bringing their talents to the College of Charleston Satilli Theater for a concert with Chamber Music Charleston. On the program, two works by the composer who has been, as Vinacour puts it, the be-all and end-all of their collaboration so far, Johann Sebastian Bach. Recently, I had the chance to speak with Pine and Vinacour via remote interview to learn a bit more about these works and what they mean to them. Here's part of that conversation. Rachel, Jory, it's so exciting to have both of you today.
Thank you.
Great to be here.
Now, have either of you performed in Charleston, South Carolina before, or will this be your first time? Jory, we'll start with you.
I have certainly performed in Charleston several times. I've given two or three concerts at the College of Charleston, played for Piccolo Spoleto. I even recorded Handel suites at First Scots Presbyterian, probably about 12, 13 years back. So I know and love Charleston.
Gosh, you know, I should have looked this up before we spoke. It all starts to run together after a while. I have certainly done plenty throughout both of the Carolinas, but I can't specifically remember whether I've done Charleston yet. So this might very well be my first time, but my apologies if I'm forgetting something.
It's understandable. You keep a very busy touring schedule. At this upcoming performance of Chamber Music Charleston, you're performing two Bach works, his Brandenburg Concerto No. 5 and his violin sonata in E major, BWV 1016. Now, Rachel, this second work I mentioned that you and Jory are performing, this is one with a special meaning for you, right?
Yeah, well, this was actually the keyboard and violin sonata that I chose as the one that I performed for the second round of the J.S. Bach International Competition in Leipzig. I was delighted to be the first American to ever get the gold medal. And actually, no American has yet gotten the gold medal again since 92. So hopefully it'll come back to the U.S. at some point. But I was just thinking about the fact that that concert in 92 was the last time I ever played this sonata on a modernized violin rather than a Baroque setup instrument. And so it'll be a pleasure to kind of revisit it in its anachronistic but just as beautiful garb.
Yes, and I'm excited to hear some about that modernized violin here in just a bit. And this sonata is part of a collection of sonatas you turned the other set of six, the first set being the solo violin sonatas and partitas with no accompaniment. But this collection you see as being also very worthy of attention.
Oh, they're absolutely gorgeous works. And I had always wanted to record them, and I had always wanted to record them with Jory. So it was a dream come true when we got to make our album for Sadie Records, which of course also includes the beautiful aria that was a discarded movement, not because of quality, but just because of flow from his last sonata. So the six sonatas plus a little extra. That album came out a few years ago, and we've had the pleasure of touring with the program. And so this will only be one of the sonatas, but you'll get a taste of not just, you know, my chance to play with a beautiful harpsichordist, but the fact that our musical collaboration goes back for many years. And in fact, many years before the recording, when we would get together in Chicago and read together and stuff like that.
And would you say that Bach has been kind of the central part of that collaboration, or... You know, I assume it expands to other composers as well, but is Bach the core?
Yeah, Bach has been the be-all and end-all of this. And from our earliest meetings, we were reading from among these six sonatas, which are more or less trio sonatas, so violin with a written-out concertante harpsichord. I won't even use the word accompaniment, but the two instruments playing together as equal partners. We are discussing certainly some other projects, and that could include works of the 20th century for violin and harpsichord.
You mentioned written out. Now, quite often when you're talking about Baroque repertoire, if there's a harpsichord in a smaller chamber setting, you don't really have these extensive written out parts, right? It's almost like the 17th century, 18th century equivalent of a lead sheet, right?
You could say that. That's a very good way of putting it, that continuo in the Baroque period, be it harpsichord or lute, theorbo, organ, etc., you have tremendous solo repertoires for each of the above. But when they appeared in ensemble, it was, as you said, kind of a lead sheet, figured bass, playing harmonies over, of course, a somewhat determined harmonic figure. And Bach, and almost simultaneously his sons Wilhelm Friedmann and Carl Philipp Emanuel Bach, innovate. The Fifth Brandenburg is likely the first so-called harpsichord concerto, where we see a written solo harpsichord against an ensemble. And near the same time, I believe, I'm looking at Rachel, but near the same time, for instance, the six sonatas for violin with a written out harpsichord accompaniment are very different than the two sonatas for violin with a continual accompaniment.
Yeah, so basically, you know, most Baroque harpsichord music has a left hand, the bass voice of the harpsichord, with given notes and then just, yeah, chords. And you would improvise your right hand, which is quite fun because you can, you know, create dynamics by, you know, the frequency and fullness of the chords, add different rhythms, you know, kind of make it your own and design it to go along with the collective interpretation. So you have a lot of freedom, but it's just a very different animal. And I almost think that in a lot of the movements of this set of duo sonatas, that they really are, as Jory said, actually trios, trio for harpsichord left hand, harpsichord right hand, and violin as three independent voices. And so that's really a pleasure.
Thank you so much for explaining that, because I've featured trio sonatas on my show before, and invariably it's either one, maybe with two performers where the harpsichord does have two parts essentially, or maybe even four or five where the continuo is split among, mm-hmm. you know, several people. So it's good to have that explanation, I think. And, you know, it means three parts and not necessarily three performers, three humans
right.
up on stage.
Exactly. Like the trio sonatas for organ would be a very good example. It is one performer, but the performer's right hand, left hand, pedal board.
Right. And clearly that shows Bach as, you know, someone who gave a little special attention and love to the keyboard, I think. And I hope to touch on that here in a bit when we get to his Brandenburg Concerto. But for this E major sonata, I was wondering if you could provide something of a little guided tour, brief guided tour through the work. I mean, the movements have this slow, fast progression. But beyond that, what's the character of this piece? What do you feel when you play it?
Well, it has a very extroverted nature. You know, I mean, E major is a very open and brilliant key. And so, yeah, it just really puts a smile on your face. Of course, the second slow movement, the third movement of the sonata, is in the relative minor of C sharp minor. And so you get, you know, a little bit more pathos and, you know, kind of exploring the darker side a little bit. And then it goes into this absolutely fun, flashy, very fast, brilliant last movement. So, yeah, it's a real crowd pleaser. It's probably the most popular of the set of six, probably the most frequently performed. And I love each of them in their own way. But, you know, there's definitely a reason why everybody comes back to the E major. And if you're going to do just one in a concert, you certainly can't go wrong.
Yep, absolutely. And I would also say the first movement of the sonata is a little bit the exception to this trio sonata rule. The violin has a very, very ornate cantilena melody, singing in the high range of the instrument. And the harpsichord has a nearly orchestral type accompaniment, rather like in the cantatas. So it's a very interesting and very strangely difficult harpsichord part. So very unusual first movement. And as Rachel said, the quick movements are absolutely jubilant.
And actually, there's another element, now that you mentioned the first movement, another improvisatory tradition of the Baroque was the addition of ornaments to melody lines, you know, the kind of melismas that jazz singers or R&B singers would do, adding extra notes to a melody that's more plain or bare and is not meant to be played just as written. And what Bach did in a number of his works is actually wrote out ornaments, which in a way, when you think about it, is a little odd. It would be like one jazz composer writing every single little note that another jazz musician was supposed to play. That would be kind of stifling that person's individuality and being a little dictatorial. But of course, you know, 300 years on, we're very grateful that Bach did that for us, because now we have this amazing record of beautiful ornaments with just perfect taste.
Doesn't leave us guessing or necessarily going through all the treatises by the composers at the time.
Correct. And there's some reminiscence of the ornamented version of the first movement of Corelli's sonatas. And Bach is certainly in that tradition, I believe we could say.
Oh, yes. He's absolutely following the rules, except for the rule that normally the composer doesn't do it themselves. The performer would normally be extemporizing, which I love to do. But, there's a special pleasure in playing these ornaments, given to us by Bach himself.
And the harpsichord part is of such complexity itself that I think there is also a reason for Bach not to merely provide the so-called simple version of the melody over that. It's a very detailed composition indeed.
As you were indicating earlier, dating some of these Bach works can be a bit tricky, but these seem to be around his Cöthen years, I think. So working for this Calvinist prince who really didn't have a lot of use for elaborate music in church services, so it seems like Bach was freed up to kind of focus on more secular instrumental music. I'll put secular in quotation marks because with Bach, it seems like at least he was always kind of pointing toward the divine. Also from this time in Bach's career is a work that was part of a portfolio that must surely rank as one of history's most stellar job applications that met with absolutely no response from the would-be employer. The set of six concertos that Bach wrote in hopes of working for this one, Christian Ludwig, Margrave of Brandenburg-Schwedt, hence the collection's title, Brandenburg Concertos. Now, the fifth in this set is a concerto for flute, harpsichord, and violin, and that's the one that you're going to be playing at this performance as well, following the sonata, right?
Correct.
Would you say that all three soloists share the spotlight pretty evenly in this work, or is there kind of some competition for, the limelight? How does that fabric play out?
Before Rachel reaches over and slaps me, I feel, and I'm sorry, Rachel, it's a harpsichord concerto, and that is the very clear innovation of the piece. It's a harpsichord concerto. The harpsichordist is given a cadenza, which is a pretty darn good 6 or 7 minutes. Which doesn't happen elsewhere in the group of the six concerti, although I think if we were to make the comparison, we could compare it to the fourth Brandenburg, which is a very clear violin solo with the two recorders playing a wonderfully essential role, but not on the equal to the violin soloist. Thus, in the fifth Brandenburg, the harpsichord has the dominating solo role, and the flute and violin are ornamental within that, although of course they're absolutely essential.
I was going to say, it's like lead actor, supporting actors, and then, the extras. it's a wonderful chamber music conversation, but yes, the harpsichord does have the opportunity to shine, and all of us enjoy witnessing that. The middle movement is without tutti strings, and so that movement is just a trio.
It is a real trio.
And with flute, violin, and harpsichord, while everybody else gets to chill out. And then the fuller string section rejoins us for the last movement. So I like the way that he plays with texture in this work.
I do as well. And it is worthwhile noting that this concerto, the fifth Brandenburg, compared to the other seven extant harpsichord concerti that we know, Bach does oblige the harpsichord soloist to go back and forth between the written out solo part, so a real concerto, as you'd find a little bit later in Mozart and Beethoven, and the continuo. So there is a lot of continuo playing that is still obligatory in this work.
Do you have any new discoveries that either of you have made over the years after performing these works? I mean, after revisiting them, is there something maybe for this performance that you're going to try out that you haven't in prior performances, or something that stands out to you?
Well, I have a completely non-musical answer to that question, which is that I just hit upon the perfect page formatting solution for my page turns. After all these years, I got the inspiration for exactly how to tape them together so that they fit on the stand and I can see everything and not have to worry about flipping pages or any of that. So, you keep improving in various realms as you spend your life on the road.
This is a very good answer. I think we're always looking for that inspired and lively performance, but I don't know that I have hit upon one element, which is truly revelatory. And my pages are in order.
But there is room for spontaneity and maybe something, you know, kind of to happen in this performance, of course, that you don't anticipate.
Well, and that's the beauty of playing with different colleagues for different concerts. And of course, as primarily a concerto soloist, you know, that's what I experience, you know, all the time, you know, yet another Tchaikovsky concerto, except this time it's with this conductor and this flute player and this bassoon player and this concertmaster in this hall. And it, you know, it gives it a different feel every time. And, you know, so we're going to play with a flute player and a cellist and everybody that, you know, we have never played with before. And that's going to give new and spontaneous dimension to this week's performance.
Absolutely. And I think especially for a harpsichord, this piece becomes really part of our normal arsenal. And this is between the concert in Charleston and the end of the year, the first of 9 performances of this that I'll play. So then the last of those performances this year is in Hawaii. So bringing the Brandenburg Fifth to some wide geographical regions.
Whoa, so you get to go to Hawaii in winter. I'm jealous.
I can't help but think Bach might be very amazed to realize that this work was going so far after it didn't quite get in the job with the Margrave.
Isn't that incredible? I mean, among the greatest music ever composed.
Well, let's talk instruments for a moment. Rachel, you mentioned that you're kind of departing from the typical way you've played some of this Bach in more recent years. What violin will you be using for this concert?
So I'll be using my usual fiddle, which is the incredible 1742 Guarneri del Gesù, the Exposizione Exsultat. It was personally chosen by Brahms for one of his proteges, the woman soloist from the 19th century, Marie Soldat, who was one of the first champions of his concerto and frequently played chamber music together with Brahms. So of course, being built in 1742 when Bach was still alive, this instrument would have started life as a Baroque violin, but it was modernized long ago at the beginning of the 1800s. So it's lived life as a modern setup instrument far longer than it ever existed as a Baroque violin. And it really is one of the kind of fiddle that, you know, is actually probably of more use to the world being heard with a modern voice. And what I mean by that is basically when you take an instrument made in the old way, or when you make a new instrument made in the old way, it's a shorter, fatter neck set at a straight angle. And so they have to, you know, chop off the necks of the old instruments, most of which, you know, happened in the 1800s. And then set a longer neck at a slightly downward slope. They put on a longer fingerboard. Now we use metal strings instead of gut. All of these changes. Now, you know, with art, change is not evolution is not improvement. You wouldn't say that all of the paintings of the 1700s are superior to all of the paintings of the 1600s, and all of the paintings of the 1800s are better yet. Art doesn't work that way. It's just different means of human expression, and so really, the purpose of these modifications and the switch to a different style of bow to draw across the strings is to make the instrument louder. And this evolution has continued with the use of pickups and, you know, fully solid body electric violins with amps. And so it's actually just as radical a departure to go from a Baroque setup violin to a modern setup violin as to go from a what's now considered to be a normal violin to an electric violin, but all for the same purpose, going from a 200 seat hall to a 2000 seat hall to now a 20,000 seat hall, and just simply being able to be heard. So you do lose some nuance when you go to greater volume. And so there's a pleasure in playing the kind of instruments that would have been used during Bach's time. But I'm definitely keeping it still within that sound world to a certain degree, because I will be using a Baroque bow with the modernized 1742 Guarneri. And that gives the notes certain shapes. It also has a role to play in the color of the tone. And, you know, just helps you with, you know, basically articulation. The articulation, lots of the elements that you need to have more of a historically informed type of performance. So it won't be fully modern in terms of, you know, I won't be using gobs of vibrato and a legato-y sound and, you know, turning into I don't know, Oystrecker Isaac Stern playing Brandenburg or something. It'll still sound like Baroque music, but on my glorious Diljesu.
And Jory, are you traveling with your instrument?
Certainly not.
And I should just add here again that you play harpsichord. So is it hard getting used to a new harpsichord in each setting?
Yes and no. I do a good deal of groundwork finding out what we have, who will be servicing the instrument. And there is a wonderful lady, Ann Acker, who I believe lives in Savannah, Georgia, and she is coming specially to Charleston for us and will provide the instrument, although I am not absolutely certain who made the instrument that I'll be performing on.
And is this a double manual harpsichord to allow for a little? Okay.
Yes. And that's, although Bach doesn't specify it in these works, it is basically necessary. For the Fifth Brandenburg, it's downright necessary at times. And even for the sonatas, it's frankly clearly intended for the largest instrument at Bach's disposal at that time, which would be, of course, a double manual instrument.
For some dynamic variety as well.
More dynamic variety, greater sound. The instruments tended to be bigger if they feature two keyboards. So, yeah.
Will you both be in town long, or are you hitting the road pretty quickly to take this music and other works elsewhere?
Yeah, well, I'm on tour almost continually for these first 10 months of the fall season. Back to it, crisscrossing the country from coast to coast and up and down and every which way. So, and Jory is, well, I ventured, to Quebec to kick things off, but Jory is, of course, crossing the ocean a number of times.
Yeah, yes. Rachel's schedule is usually kind of hard to beat, but like Rachel, I'm thrilled to be back at concerts here in the United States. And with Rachel, we'll be off after Charleston to play together again in Columbus. And then I will finish the month of October. I'm conducting and performing with Seattle Symphony, and we'll play the Fifth Brandenburg two times for them, as well as Bach's D minor harpsichord concerto.
Well, sounds like a lot of exciting performances for both of you coming up, and, all the best at all of them, and also especially here with Chamber Music Charleston. Hope you both have a great time here in South Carolina, and thanks so much for sharing today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you indeed. Thank you so much.
Part of a conversation I had with violinist Rachel Barton Pine and harpsichordist Jory Vinicor. Pine and Vinicor will perform alongside Chamber Music Charleston for the season opener of the organization's 2021-2022 Ovation Concert Series. That concert is tonight at 7 p.m. at the College of Charleston Satilli Theater. Joining Pine and Vinicor as a soloist for Bach's Brandenburg Concerto No. 5 is flutist Regina Helcher-Yost, and Pine will also be first violinist for the work concluding the concert, Beethoven's String Quartet No. 11 in F minor. More information at chambermusiccharleston.org. In full disclosure, Chamber Music Charleston is a financial supporter of South Carolina Public Radio. For South Carolina Public Radio and Sonatas and Soundscapes, I'm Bradley Fuller.